So I'm going to start with a very short reading, which is Deuteronomy 6, verses 4 to 8. I've got it on the screen. This is a verse that's been very special to the mission that's called MESSI. So it's sort of a foundation scripture. So I'll just read it to you now. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. These commandments that I give to you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road and when you lie down and when you get up. So some of you know that this August my son Harry and myself went to Togo in West Africa to visit mission projects with MESSI. The deacons asked if I'd give some feedback, so here I am, rather nervously. I'm not going to be giving a glossy missions talk, as you might sometimes get when people come to share about a missions work and to raise money. I'm not going to be saying everything's wonderful, because everything isn't. So it's going to be a realistic look at some of the challenges that MESSI is facing. But for those of you who may not have heard a MESSI talk before, but I'm just going to start off with a little bit of background. First of all, about the country of Togo. So, Togo is a French-speaking country in West Africa. It's very long and thin, as you can see. It's between Ghana and Benin. It's got a population of about 6 million people, and over 50% are under the age of 16. So it's a very young country. And in fact, it was quite noticeable when Harry and I were there how few old people you see as you're walking around, and that's because they just don't survive. Life expectancy is not great. It's made up of a number of tribes with many different languages, but the main one is Airways. So when we were over there, some people did speak English, but people tend to be speaking French or they're speaking Airways. So we went over there to see mission projects that are being undertaken by MESSI. So what is MESSI? It stands for Mission Enfants pour Christ International. So that's French really for something, Children for Christ mission. And that's basically what it is. It's a mission that's aimed directly at children. It trains and supports local Christians in Togo to be able to run Christian ministry for children. And we're used in this country to having lots of resources. We have Sunday schools, we have youth groups, we've got photocopyable resources that we can use in our Sunday schools with ideas for games and crafts. There's nothing like that in MESSI, in Togo. They don't really have a basic understanding of even how to play some sort of games that we play over here with children, or craft. They don't have the resources, glues, paints, etc. So MESSI is about teaching the local Christians and the local churches what they could do in their church for their children. In the past, a Sunday school might be the equivalent of a lady with a big stick keeping the children at the back of church quiet, and if they were noisy, they get a rap on their hands. And it's moving them away from that. The children are not the church of tomorrow, they're the church of today, so they need to be taught about Jesus and be given the same opportunities that the adults have to have a personal relationship with him. So as well as training local Christians, it also does direct ministry with children. So that helps keep the MESSI volunteers firmly focused on children's work, the needs of children. It provides examples of the kind of ministries that local churches could set up and could replicate. And encourages best practice because lessons can be learnt and passed on for future training. So the history of MESSI is that it was set up by a Togolese man called Gadamo Numadi. Liz was a member of this church. She'd become a Christian through this church, and she's a paediatric nurse, and she went out on short-term mission to Togo and met Gad and found out about what he was doing through MESSI. They fell in love. Gad moved to the UK and married Liz, and he studied for a degree at All Nations Christian College, and they had two children, Corbin and Lael. And I'm sure many of you remember them when they were here at the church. But they had a vision to go back to Togo, because even though the work was carrying on while Gad was in this country, it was quite fragile, and they had a vision to go back and to really get stuck in. So in 2008, Gadamo and Liz came to visit Graham, my husband and myself, sat in our kitchen and asked us if we would help them to set up a UK charity to raise money and awareness for the work of Messi and Togo. In 2009, Gad and Liz were accepted as Crosslinks mission partners. Crosslinks would pay for their living expenses while they were in Togo. Messi UK, which is what Graham and I had set up, charity we'd helped set up, would fund the work that was being done. So we would be paying for the resources, the training resources, the office, the travel expenses of the volunteers out there. And in 2010, it all came together, and the Numadis, as a family, moved back to Togo to live in the capital, Lomé. And they were there for 6 years. And what they were doing, they were running training courses in level one and level two children's ministry. They were working in a disability school in the capital. They were helping to train volunteers to go in and support the disability school. Because in Togo, you don't get diagnosis of problems. So children with learning disabilities, for example, with autism or Down syndrome or cerebral palsy, the parents actually don't know what's wrong with them. They don't know if they're going to get better, they're going to grow out of it. People can be quite fearful of children who are different or have disabilities. They think they're under a curse, or they're possessed, or they might be a witch. So there's a lot of stigma, and a lot of disabled children are hidden and kept in the home. And this school was one of the few government schools for disabled children, but even though there was only one member of staff with all these children, they only had 5 books in the library. It was a matter of just really holding on to them during the day, not really teaching them anything. They didn't understand the challenging behaviours the children had, so the staff had no sympathy or compassion for them. So Liz, as a paediatric nurse, trained the volunteers to see these children as completely different, that they actually had a disability, it wasn't their fault, they weren't evil, showing them ways you could handle them, different techniques, and the challenging behaviours came down, and the volunteers really began to love those children, see them in a completely different way. So the school environment was completely transformed. They also ran something called Miawozen in their home, which was Liz would open her home up for mothers with disabled children. They would come in and she would talk to them, love them, you know, just be like a playgroup for them and show them some sort of basic physiotherapy techniques. There was also a ministry into a youth detention centre called Brigade, where young people who'd got on the wrong side of the law were being kept in really very, very basic conditions, going in there and giving them Bible stories, games, and just really showing them, bringing food and showing them love. They also set up Adi United, which is a football ministry with very impoverished boys, many of them sort of basically street children or from very poor backgrounds, to bring them together playing football, but also to have, as well as the football training, to run either Alpha or other kind of Bible studies for the boys. Gad had very strong links with a rural village called Ando Bedo, which is about an hour and a half outside of Lomé. And during their time there, they organised for the borehole, which wasn't working, to be sort of refurbished so that it worked. I don't really remember, we raised money for a toilet block. And Liz ran a monthly health clinic there because she was a nurse, so she used to go along and just do basic healthcare. Mercy's also worked with other charities out there. We've worked with Urban Saints, a little bit with Compassion. Also, Mercy supported the first Alpha conference that happened in Lomé, which was exciting. And also they've been involved with something called Stop Witchcraft Allegations, which is an organisation to stop children being accused of being witches. These children who look different. It's a very superstitious culture, so if things are going wrong in the family, they're looking for someone to blame. Is it because, you know, the child is the witch? So it's training Christians to understand these children aren't witches. There's, you know, bad things happen. It's not that something sort of supernatural has been going on. So that's what happened while Liz and Gad were over there. So what's happening now? Liz and Gad returned to the UK in 2016, and they're living in Frinton-on-Sea. Liz is working full-time as a nurse. Gad is working in a school for children with learning disabilities and also doing a master's in international project management. They're no longer able to be actively involved with Mercy because of the pressure of their lives at the moment. So, this is just a little bit of the boring background, because I understand that over the years it's been quite difficult for people to understand the complex structure of Mercy. So, there are actually 2 Mercy organisations. Mercy Togo is a non-governmental organisation in Togo There's a small team who deliver the training in the ministries. It's headed up by a man called Dosse, and he's supported by Dahl. Dosse tends to, he has overall responsibility, but he also goes in twice a week to the youth detention centre. And Dahl is the gentleman who, with a helper called Patrice, runs the football ministry, the Bible studies and the training and the matches. There's also other volunteers and sessional workers who we will pay just to help if there's training. We will pay them to just deliver training when it's being conducted. So that is a separate legal organisation, the MESSI UK, which is a UK charity whose purpose is to raise funds and support for MESSI in Togo. So there are trustees, which are currently my Carol Whittle, who's somewhere, not here. Oh, she's in Sunday school, junior church. She's the chair. My husband, Graham, is the treasurer. I'm the secretary, and Simon Whittle is also another trustee. So it's quite a small team. There's only four of us at the moment. In the past, we have had other people from this church serve as trustees. So the two separate legal entities make up MESSI. So at the moment, MESSI is currently going through a transition from a ministry based primarily on the vision and work of Gad and Liz Numadi to becoming a standalone non-governmental organisation with a registered office and a fully trained local team who supervise a wider group of volunteers. So that's where we've been at since 2016, what we've been trying to do. So now we get on to Catherine and Harry's big adventure. We were going to visit MESSI projects, meet the team, and assess the challenges that they face. We were travelling out with Gad, who wasn't going to Togo on MESSI business, because they're no longer really involved with MESSI, though obviously it's very much on their heart. He was going out there to see his family members, his brother and his sister, but also as part of his Master's in International Project Management, he's been involved with the European Union have a diaspora project where people from third world countries who are well educated are being given grants to go back to their countries and set up projects to help the indigenous people. So Gad is actually involved in a project to set up pineapple plantations in Togo because apparently there's a worldwide pineapple shortage. And pineapples are not naturally grown in Togo, but it's got the perfect climate. So you can see how it could work really well, that if the Togolese farmers could be taught to farm pineapples, it could be a really good income stream for them. So Gab was going out there to do that. And also he was going out there to deliver water filters to Ando Bedo, because I don't know whether he was trying to raise money for water filters, and we sponsored him to do an ab sale, but he raised enough money to get water filters for every family in Ando Bedo. So I'll show you more about that later. So we were travelling with Gad, because I was a little bit nervous, going all the way to Africa, whereas I had to be the grown-up. I mean, Harry was with me, but I felt, oh dear, it's all falling on me. So it was great to travel with him. And when I arrived in the capital, there was people to meet us, and so I didn't have to worry about how to get to where we were going. We were flying into the unknown. A couple of weeks before we left, Carol Whittle got in touch with me in a bit of a panic, because she'd had an email correspondence with Dosse, who heads up MESSI, and discovered that our accommodation had fallen through. We had thought we'd booked to stay in a Christian guest house, and it was a very nice guest house that Simon and Carol had stayed in before and highly recommended. And in an email correspondence with Dosse, she discovered actually we weren't booked in this guest house, that it had fallen through, and we were going to be staying in a villa with Gad. And that sounded very nice, a villa, but Carol assured me that villas in Togo are not at all how we imagine a villa might be on the Costa del Sol. And I was a bit fed up, because I'd wanted Harry and I to be in a guest house, because I knew the days were going to be busy, and I wanted us in the evening to be going somewhere sort of neutral, where we could just relax and do our own cooking and play cards, and I could spend time with Harry. You know, it's good to spend time one-to-one with your children. I didn't really want to be in a villa with Gad, because wherever Gad is, there's always loads of people, loads of action, activity, visitors, and I thought, oh, I'm going to end up cooking for everybody, and I didn't know how I was going to do that, I didn't know what kind of food I'd be cooking. It was all a bit unknown, so I was a bit terrified. I didn't tell Harry, because I didn't want him to be worried, but off we went. And so we went from a Christian guest house to sharing a villa. When we got there, it was just basically a rented house, as if you rented it almost empty. There was bare furnishings. There was no sheets for the bed. There was no toilet roll in the bathroom. No crockery or cutlery in the kitchen. No mosquito nets or mosquito screens in the window. Gab started talking about, we'll have to get a carpenter in to build a frame for your beds to get your mosquito nets. And it was obvious that it wasn't really going to be suitable. But actually, Harry and I, after a long journey, about 11 hours flying, we were just glad to be there. And Gad started saying, no, we need to move somewhere else. And I think Harry and I were kind of like, well, we just want to be somewhere and start sort of setting up camp. But we stayed there the night, but Gad was saying, no, this isn't suitable for you. So the next day, he was running around trying to find an alternative and actually worked a miracle and found that there was an empty conference centre. He was going to be going to a conference the week after we left to do with pineapple plantations, and that he was going to be in that conference centre, and he contacted them and it was actually empty and they were getting it ready for the pineapple conference. So we were able to stay there at no extra cost to where we'd originally been booked into this villa. So we went from a kitchen that looked like this, so that's where I cooked a meal on our first night, to a kitchen that looked like this, so you can see it was a massive improvement. We went from a toilet that looked like this to a massive ensuite, which also had a sort of a shower on the other side of the wall. That was the bed I had to lie on the first night, and I get into a beautiful bed with my welcome pack of toiletries. So as you can see, it was God was good. We ended up somewhere a lot better. So it was quite a contrast, and we did find that Lomé itself, as a capital, is a capital of contrasts. It's a very, very busy place, which I wasn't really quite expecting. When you were on the main roads, it was like being in the rush hour in London. There was so much traffic. There's several really large dual carriageways going through the centre of Lomé, but once you get off those dual carriageways, it's really dirt tracks. So you're going from a place that looks really busy and buzzing to a place that looks actually, in a way, quite rural. So this is one of those, you know, you take your life in your hands when you get in a taxi in Lomé, and the pedestrians also take their life in their hands. This is traffic, we're just ploughing through a market, basically, and people are getting out of the way. This is one of the dual carriageways. You can see, this is a man. He's just strolling down the middle of the dual carriageway. And in fact, you would get motorbikes, there's motorbikes everywhere, who didn't want to be bothered to go down to the next junction to turn around and go back the way they wanted. They would just drive the wrong way up the dual carriageway. So it was really hair-raising. And Harry and I were in these taxis that had no seat belts, and it was almost like, dear Lord, please help us to survive this journey. But when you turn off the main roads, you're literally somewhere completely different. Just horses, just on the side of the road, chickens, goats everywhere. This is from the terrace, sort of the balcony of the conference centre. So that's us looking out onto the road below. So you've got the modern cars, but they're on these really bad dirt tracks with lots of just rocks in the middle of them. You know, some of the roads there'd be a big rock right in the middle and you're having to sort of drive around them. So that's a view from where we were staying. Here's another view directly opposite. There was a farm. So this is a big white cow. So we had cockerels and cockerels crowing at really early hours of the morning, for about 4 o'clock. Chickens would just be walking around the road. Nobody seemed to be caring for their chickens. Apparently they just find their own way home and get back to the right place. But this was the terrace from which we're looking down on that. So you can see, as me, I've made myself a nice cup of tea in my china cup. I took my tea bags with me. So it seemed a big contrast of where we were staying to just what was going on outside our room. Here is the rooftop next to our terrace where the stray dogs were just sort of lying around, just enjoying themselves up there. And this was at the entrance when we came out of the conference centre one day. There was just a family cooking a goat on the street. Apparently it takes all day to cook a goat, so this was just a goat, and they just lit a fire underneath it. So you can imagine you're going from quite a nice conference centre to stepping out, and that's the sight you see. There's no sort of services in Lomé, so there's no refuse collectors, so you'd walk around and there'd be just massive areas where rubbish is dumped. You see there's children picking through. This is a still from the video. You actually see this in the video. It's just swarming with chickens. It's all chickens pecking in the rubbish. There's a dog just scavenging. We had to buy food there, obviously. So one of the very first things we did was go to the market. We'd taken tinned meat because we were told, whatever you do, don't eat the meat out there. But we had to get some vegetables. So there's Harry, just in the market. There was fish, but it was 35 degree heat. It's all just sitting out there. I'm not sure whether you would fancy having any of that. There's me, holiday snap, just to say I was there. This is the meat that's just been butchered in the market. As I say, it's 35 degree heat. This is the man with a big stick with some strips of material, just swatting the flies off. As I say, we took our own tinned ham and chicken, and we didn't just did our own vegetables. But part of Togo, you can see that they're trying to invest in it. This is we were taken to a beach area where they're trying to encourage tourism, or the more wealthy Togolese people to go along to. So there's a very beautiful beach. You have to pay to go on it. This was the kind of walkway down to the beach. There's sort of a few cafes and bars. They've dug a kind of a safe lagoon for swimmers. We actually went there at the end of the day, so they let us go in without having to pay because it was right at the very end. Because we didn't really want to sit on the beach. And there's a picture of Harry and myself, and this is Dosse, who heads up Messi. This is the gentleman who was actually acting as our driver, and I can't actually remember his name. I don't know whether you remember his name. Quite early on, I think it was the next day, Gad wanted to collect his father. And his father lives in a place called Barlimé, which is to the northwest, about an hour and a half's drive. It's inland, and it's in the mountainous area of Togo. So this is what they count a mountain. I mean, I think in our country we'd call it a big hill, but it's much cooler, so it was much more pleasant there. So it's considered a really nice place to go to and to live. And this, now for those of you who know, I was quite shocked actually, those of you who know Gadamo, this is Gadamo's hometown. Behind these gates is his primary school. I mean, when you know Gadamo, you can't really imagine that actually he comes from somewhere really so basic. This is his home farm. These are his family members. They all live in this house. They're actually quite big land, very big landowners, and they're well respected in the village. And this is, you know, considered to be a good house. It's a brick-built house, so they're considered to be well off. He's got his father and his uncle and his uncle's wife here. It's a big greetings culture, so they were all waiting for us, and we had to sort of sit down and greet each other. This is the borehole. So Gadamo drank from this sort of every day of his childhood. And I did say to him, do you think God's got a sense of humour that we're now in Frinton-on-Sea, which is this really middle-class area? Do you think the Gadamo... I mean, I thought it was a big culture shock when Liz went from St Albans to Togo, but actually I think it's been a bigger culture shock, in a way, for Gadamo to come from this to the UK, and particularly Frinton-on-Sea. This is Gad's father with Harry. Even though there was a bit of a language difficulty, they struck up a friendship. And in fact, this top is Gad's father's top, and as a farewell gift he gave it to Harry. Harry's very kindly letting me wear it. So this is a real authentic village woven, it's not the sort of touristy type stuff. Harry didn't really have anything to give him in return, so he gave him a rather creased and greasy pack of cards that we'd been playing pontoon with every night. So we visited Adder United. It was a Bible study, and it was on the street just under trees. So the boys meet literally on the road under a tree. The chairs are kept by, it's opposite the house where Liz and Gad had lived in when they were over there. And a neighbour stores the plastic chairs for them. They just turn up, get the plastic chairs out of their storage, and they sit on the side of the road for a Bible study. And this was one of the highlights. So actually see these boys. See, this is one of their Bibles. They're all given, when they join Adder United football, they're all given a Bible. And they were so attentive. And this is a group of teenage boys. If you've got a group of teenage boys studying the Bible in our country, I don't think you'd get the behaviour that you got there. As a society, it's quite authoritarian. You know, people are taught to respect their elders, so they do listen. They're not mucking around at all. This is Dahl, who is leading the Bible study. They were taken in turns to read a Bible passage. There were quite a lot of Bible passages. A boy would read a Bible passage. Dahl would speak about it, and then he would ask for feedback from the boys. He would ask them to say what they thought about it, how it applied to their life. So this is a very different way of learning than would be in the schools. in Togo where it's learning by rote. You just listen to the teacher. You're just told to accept what you're being what you're hearing. Here, they're encouraging the boys to think about the Bible passages and to apply it to their own lives and to give feedback on what they think it means. So it's just a really exciting way to see these boys learning about the Bible. What Dar was teaching them about when we were there was about prayer, and he was going through the Lord's Prayer, but bringing in other passages to back up what he was saying. There was looking at the reasons for prayer. It was for worship, thanks, confessing of sins, asking God for what we need, asking for protection from evil, and praying for others. So here's one of the boys just standing up and reading from the Bible. And there's a picture of us all after the Bible study. It's quite a small number. Addy United's got about 70 boys. But this was on a Saturday morning, and so a lot of the children have to work in their family businesses. So these are the ones that were able to come. Some of them, you can see Harry's taller than a few of them, but actually they're all quite small and wiry because they don't have very good nutrition. And it was August, it was the same week that actually the A-level results are coming out in this country. And obviously they get their end of school results about the same time, because there was, at the end, they were kind of congratulating the boys for those who'd achieved well in their school year. And there was one boy, I don't know what he was, but he was probably one of these. He looked very small, he looked about 12, but he was 17 and he'd just been accepted at the university to study medicine. And they were just so proud of him. If you knew where these children came from, and it was just great to see that some of them are going to be able to move on with their lives, move on to better things. Now this is a picture, I'm afraid, off the website, because Harry did some training, football training with the boys. I haven't got a photograph, but Harry could testify they really train hard. It starts quite early in the morning and they would be playing football all day, and they don't have a good diet. They probably maybe not even had any breakfast. Harry was exhausted, I think. It was really full on in sort of, 35 plus heat. There's another picture of the boys. We also visited the youth detention centre. We were warned in advance that at least one of the boys was a murderer, but others could be there for very minor crimes. Messi goes in twice a week with a Bible study and some games and some food. These boys are kept locked up in cells with four or five people per cell, maybe from late afternoon to about 7 o'clock in the morning, and then they're all put together in one room for the rest of the day. So it might be 25, 30 boys in a room that's probably a quarter of the size of this room. I mean, it's a small room, and there's these boys are just kept there all day, and they're so bored. Have Messi to go in and bring them Bible study and games. They really want to engage in it because it's something interesting and to break up the monotony of the day. So this is just a little summary. Messi works in Brigade, where children some as young as five are provided with protection, await trial or serve their sentence. Being in prison is not just for hardened criminals. The criminal justice system is very slow. Many families don't have any financial means to pay for a lawyer. So Messi will provide support for these children and young people, visiting twice a week, bringing the gospel and helping them to make contact with their families and cope with the rigours of family life. And they also do things like help them to learn how to make liquid soap and sandals, so when they are released, they've got something that they can fall back upon. When we were there, they were looking at studying the story of Jonah. They were thinking about the fact that Jonah ran away from God, but that God doesn't give up on you, that Jonah ended up inside the belly of the fish. It was a dark place, but it was an opportunity for repentance. And when the fish spat Jonah out, it was a chance for a new start. And one after the other, boys were standing up and saying what the story meant to them. And one of them was saying, I feel now I'm in the belly of the fish, and I'm trusting that when I'm spat out of this place, God will put me in a place that I'm meant to be. Really, there was a sense of repentance from some of the boys and really engaging with the Bible story. And there's one boy in particular who I thought looked just very, very depressed. You could see his eyes were just not sparkly, but just dull. And he had been back about four or five times to Brigade. His father wanted nothing to do with him from a very young age. He'd committed crimes. I mean, these are boys who are hungry, who've got nothing. So of course they steal, they're trying to make ends meet. Once he got in trouble with the law, his mother then didn't want anything to do with him, because out there, if you commit a crime, your family is kind of responsible for that. So the families are expected to make restoration. Well, they can't afford to pay back. So the families will abandon these boys because they don't want to be associated with them. They don't want to have people saying you've got to pay back what the boy's stolen. So his father never wanted him. His mother was now really not wanting to have anything to do with him. And so every time he was released, what do? You've got nowhere to go. You have to steal. So you get caught up in drugs or some gangs, and you come back again. And he just looked so hopeless. It was really heartbreaking because, you know, they're only the age of Harry, my own son, and you just feel for them. We also visited Ando Bedo, which is a rural village about an hour and a half away from Lome, the capital. It's a journey down quite a rough track, which you worry that if you broke down, you'd never get back again. Now, previously, when Liz and Gab were out there, and they supported the church plant out there by a pastor called Timothy, and they mentored the chief. The chief is very important, so giving him biblical principles in which to run and govern the village is important. Messi was instrumental in getting the borehole mended, and they built a toilet block, and they ran a monthly health clinic. It's completely different from Lome. It was almost Stone Age when we got there. Very primitive housing, just rural farming, goats, chickens. But actually, it was beautiful. I don't know if you can see this. It was just the dirt was swept clean. Bearing in mind we come from Lome, where everything was really dirty, polluted, and noisy. This was just peaceful, tranquil. And it was kept, in many ways, immaculately. This is the church. As you can see, it's just a little bit of a shack. This is the inside of the church. So it wouldn't I don't know quite what they do in the rainy season. You can see it's quite a lot of holes. And this is the toilet block, one male, one female toilet, which I think those of you who've been here a long time helped to raise money to build. I did find it very disappointing when I got there because they actually had a padlock on the toilet. And I said to Gab, why is there a padlock on the toilet? He said, oh, well, you can't just have anybody using them. They might not look after them. And so I found that really disappointing because, you know, God gives to us graciously, whether we're deserving or not. And yet they felt they had these toilet blocks, but they couldn't just open them up for everyone in the village to use because they might misuse them. So I think it's one of the things in Africa that, you know, you set out to achieve things, but because culturally they're so different, it doesn't necessarily work out how you're expecting. So you'd have to have got the key to go and use the toilets. This is the village school. There's a big water tank. They collect water in the rainy season. The reason they're still collecting water in the rainy season is the borehole, I'm afraid, is broken again. It's very hard to keep these things unless you've got an engineer permanently on hand. So the borehole's not working again. They collect water in there. As you can imagine, the water's fairly horribly contaminated once it's sat there for weeks with mosquitoes and probably whatever the metal is leaching into the water. This is the inside of the school. You see, very basic. This is the football field, which is actually very rough and quite long grass. I can't imagine how they play football there. But that's the village football field. This is the local weavers, probably weaving things like this. So it's just very, very, I suppose, it seems very untouched by the modern world. People just cooking on little fires in their houses. This is what he calls himself, the local doctor. He's not really a doctor, but I think he gives injections, vaccinations. This man has broken his leg, and it's just an old bandage with a stick, and he's got to sit there for a month. The doctor's only got to sit there for a month, not walking on it. He was really fed up. But you can see in his hand, he's got a mobile phone. So there's like this contrast that it's really primitive, but they often have mobile phones. There's no electricity in the village, so they've got solar power chargers. I don't know why he's got a bone next to him to show, you know, that's the bone he's broken. This is a little child who's probably been involved in some kind of voodoo ceremony. There's a voodoo temple in the village as well as a church, because when they have them all kind of whited up like that, that shows they've been involved in some kind of thing. This is the inside of the doctor's house. You can see they're very small, basically just a place to lie down and have your mosquito net. When we arrived, there was a big gathering because Gadamo was going in with a load of water purification systems, and every household in the village was going to be presented with one. So I don't know if you came to the church, if you arrived a bit early, I had a little video playing of what it was like on this Sunday morning in Andobedo. And it reminds me of what we're like here. People are gathering together, they're all talking and chatting. Even though it's so different over there, people are the same the world over. So hopefully Graham will put it on at the end as well. So here's Gadamer with his water purification systems. I'm going to go quite quick because of time. Dirty water here is taken from basically puddles outside the village. It filters through, poured into the top, filters through a filter, comes out the bottom. Here's a girl who just had a drink of clean water. And here they are all proudly with their systems. So it was a really joyful day, actually. They were all so happy. But again, the reality is the filter will run out after a year. It's a sort of a charcoal and porcelain filter. And Gadamer was encouraging, you've got to put a little bit of money away every day, you know, when you've got spare money, you need to put it in, you need to save it, because, you know, in a year's time, you're going to have to pay £10 to get a new filter. And the reality is they probably won't be able to do that. Here's Harry with Gadamer and Dosse. There's me, just to say we were there. So the training and children's ministry, which we didn't see because there wasn't any running when we were over there, it gives the biblical context for working with children, how to plan and prepare led sessions, tips for storytelling, games and craft, and a practical opportunity to apply learning in the local community, and of course child protection and safeguarding, which is all quite new in Togo. So this is the kind of thing that happens in the training. It's all quite interactive and enjoyable for people. So since the new managers have come home, we no longer work in the disability school. It's just not possible anymore. And in fact, the disability school took on and employed the Messy volunteers themselves. But since then, they've run out of money, and so they've now had to unemploy the volunteers. So they're all quite fed up about that. The Mia Ozen Project Club for Parents and Disabled Children is closed because Liz and Gad are no longer out there for it to be held in their home. And also the monthly health clinic doesn't take place in Annabedda because Liz is no longer out there to do the nursing. So the challenges for the future are that the trustees of Mercy UK have a completely separate role from the team in Mercy Togo. We, as trustees in the UK, are here to raise funds. In Mercy Togo, they're there to deliver the ministry. We as trustees cannot get involved with the day-to-day running of Mercy Togo, not only just because of lack of time, but just the cultural understanding of what the problems are out there. The Mercy team need to be able to work independently, setting their own goals and targets with a budget that we set for them. Culturally, the team out there much prefer to follow instructions, so it's a massive transition for them to actually become proactive and strategic in their own thinking. So those are some of the challenges, but really I wanted to say a massive thank you to the church, because the church has faithfully supported Mercy over the last decade, and many of you personally support Mercy. Individually and also in your prayers, and also just thank you for your continued interest. Thousands and thousands of children's lives have actually been impacted by the work of Mercy, because hundreds of people have been trained in children's ministry. They've gone back to their churches, they've set up Sunday schools, they've set up ministries, and so there's a kind of a ripple effect of the training that has been done going out to children, hearing for the first time many of them about Jesus. The gifts that we took out were greatly appreciated. These are resources that Sylvie did. She produced photocopyable resources which can be used when telling Bible stories, the kind of things that we get from Scripture Union that they can now photocopy and use in their Sunday schools. And also we took out two new laptops for Dosse and Dahl. Here's just a few of the children that have been impacted over the last decade. Children with disabilities school, the football team, children who can now attend Sunday school and not with the lady with the big stick, but people who actually engage them in craft and active Bible stories. This was the Mia Ozen Club that used to meet in Liz and Gad's home. So that was us in the airport saying goodbye. We had an 11-hour overnight flight home. I came home half a stone lighter and with a very nasty case of viral gastroenteritis, so I can testify to the miracle of prayer and Imodium when you're on an overnight flight and being quite unwell. So really, I'd just like to finish by some of my thoughts. I was saddened by some of the things that I'd seen. I was aware of the really enormous challenge that's facing Dosse as the person who heads up the work. We've got amazing memories. I'm not doing a big plug for money. Money actually isn't the problem at the minute. The work is fragile because we need to see whether the team can come up to the mark and make Messi and Togo a more sustainable in the long term. So please do pray for them. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Mm-hmm.